The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to tell you about a book I've got in my hand. It's called Think Again, and it is written by Jacqueline Wilson, who is with me in studio. Jackie, you're very, very welcome to the show. And I should say congratulations.
Thank you.
First and foremost. But what's interesting is, you know, you're the second author I've had on the show this week who has brought back kind of a beloved character, because Roddy Doyle was with me earlier and Paula Spencer is back for the fourth time, the third book. And you've got characters beloved to so many people. I mean, is it daunting to bring them back?
It's fun, actually. I mean, people have expectations. And I mean, for instance, you telling me that about Roddy Doyle, I am thinking, well, is she still in control of her drinking? Because, you know, I'm a fan of his too. And my girls were 13, 14 when I wrote a quartet about them. And I had no idea that they were making such an impact on people that for all these years later, that people would be eager to hear how they're doing now they're pushing 40. And I just thought, there's so much to write about, the difference between, well, it's also a turning point, because at 14, you're determined that you're grown up and really angry that your parents treat you like a small child. And yet you might still be going to bed with a cuddly toy. Whereas when you're 40, there's a part of you that still is just as daft and anxious and worried about things and the way you look, although you're much better at hiding all this. And there's just a vulnerability for many people when they are 40, thinking, oh God, is this my life finished now? In that, you know, I've made decisions about a relationship, or I wish I had a relationship, or I've got my kids now, but what's next for me? Or do I want a baby after all this time? And professionally, you might be lucky enough to have a fantastic job, but you might also think, I've been doing the same thing day after day, year after year, or there's much younger, sparkier people coming up after me. There's so many different things going on. And although nowadays we have the sense to see that you're still a vibrant potential person rather than, you know, some poor old biddy that should be put in a corner. But it's still a time, I think, of reflection. And so I thought I'd do that for my main character. And because you're inside her head, you don't see her outsides, where she's probably looking very calm and in control and knowing exactly the thing to say about herself and to fit in with modern times. But I don't think you get over some of your childhood fears and anxieties. And I don't think she has. And I just wanted to show that many, many women don't have incredible jobs or incredible relationships. But of course, I'm an author. I can change her life and give her several surprises. And she's not really had a decent relationship for many years. And yet now, in the space of a few months, she has a most surprising affair with someone from the past, which certainly she never dreamt of. And then because it's called Think Again, actually there's somebody else in her life that she realises, they might be a potential relationship too. So, yeah, I play around with things, and hopefully readers will find this amusing and interesting. I want to find out about Ellie's two friends from the past as well.
And in between, say, the earlier quartet and this book, and again, to mention, Roddy talked about how he would be in these situations in his life and he would think to himself, God, what would Paula make of this? And I wonder, did that happen you? Is Ellie that real in your imagination that you would think about her in between? Or had she been put on a shelf and it's only when you came to write it you thought, right, now, where would Ellie be?
I've thought about it from time to time, and somebody has brought it up, and occasionally either some magazine had a little article about me and what might have happened to these girls. And then there was a Twitter thing. And so when eventually an editor said to me, do you fancy ever writing an adult book about these girls? Practically bit her hand off. Yes, please, I said. So that was absolutely great. And that Roddy is lucky because Paula is obviously a woman and he's obviously a man. To my slight concern, several people that I know locally in my village have got halfway through the book or whatever and said, oh, it's obvious, you're Ellie and so-and-so is so-and-so. And I've been, no, it's fiction. I make it all
but
up.
But I bet you there's a bit of those people in the book.
There are bits. I mean, my daughter has read it, which was slightly weird because my daughter from time to time has been very loyal and read the children's books and had said nice things because she's a sweetheart. If you put an adult novel into your daughter's hands, it's a weird feeling that, I mean, there's nothing too startling in the books, but it just felt a bit odd. But she did say that from time to time, Ellie's reading, Ellie's delight in women artists. She said, well, we know where that comes from. But hopefully she's a sophisticated reader and knows an awful lot. It's just in the imagination.
You know, it's a great description. John B. Keane, who obviously had a bar as well in Listowel, and they said he was the cutest of all Kerrymen because he would sell them drink, listen to their stories, and then sell their stories back to them when he wrote them down.
I mean, I think my closest friends and partner and daughter know that I might steal tiny little bits of them. I don't even mean to.
And when you describe putting a book for adults into your daughter's hand as being odd, is the word you used. I mean, in what way is it? Do you feel a bit more vulnerable writing an adult's book?
Well, there are mild sex scenes. And I don't know, you don't generally talk about anybody's sex life with your own children, even when they're grown up. There's a kind of sensible taboo about it. So, but as I said, she's sophisticated.
So, will we see them again, do you suspect? So 14, as you say, this kind of great time of change, you think you're an adult and you're bitter, your parents don't think of you the same way. 40 then, this kind of sticker twist moment you feel in your career and your life and parenthood and everything else. What's the next milestone then for Ellie?
I have ideas, but probably there won't be anything more about them at the moment. Okay. I have another surprise coming up, but as my publishers say, just smile enigmatically, which doesn't work on radio.
Okay, I can. Jackie is smiling enigmatically.
That's
and
right.
She has told us there is a surprise, but I guess it wouldn't be much of a surprise if you told us what it was. So the process of writing for kids and adults, how different is that?
It is different in a way. I mean, I've tried always in my children's books not to talk down to children.
Yeah.
To actually almost become the mind of my child character. And which has been a little bit controversial sometimes because I think some parents don't like it if they're criticised at all. Whereas, you know, children aren't necessarily always thinking the way their parents would like them to be thinking. And so I've always found that easy. But when you're writing for children, you also have to be quite careful. You don't want anything too startling or frightening. It's a very difficult sort of tightrope you have to work.
Mm.
Because if I've got anything too traumatic in my books, I mean, there has been... a sort of teasing thing going around. Jacqueline Wilson traumatized me when I was a child. Mm-hmm. I hope these girls are teasing anyway. But I don't want to upset a child or give them bad dreams. And certainly I never, ever want to encourage a child to do something dangerous or harmful or whatever. So you're always aware of what you're doing. Whereas in an adult book, by the very name, adults are reading it. And I've made it very plain that it is an adult book, and the publishers have too, so that you're freer somehow to write about whatever you want in any way you want. And so I like to do both. I've been saying it's like having two holidays a year, in that you can have all the buzz and excitement of a kind of city holiday, but a calmer, peaceful time with the children at a seaside, say, so that I like to do both. Now.
Is there a greater sense of responsibility in writing for kids, and not, you know, in any of the areas you just mentioned, but in terms of encouraging them to read, like, as in, adults are probably readers or not at this stage, and, you know, your book will come in between the previous book and the next book. Whereas, you know, be it kind of Ellie and the Gang's first outings or your Tracy Beakers or whatever, you could be the portal into reading for a child. Is that something you're conscious of?
That is one of the best things about my career, and now particularly touching when I'm meeting people promoting Think Again who have read my books as a child, because many people have said, oh, I didn't really like reading, but then I read such and such. And I feel that that's worth more than any award or anything, you know, to get a child interested in reading so they become really avid readers and are still readers now. Because in spite of all the so-called charms of modern technology, I do think reading gives you so much pleasure. And I do get worried sometimes about if a child is after they've gone past the picture book stage, if they then, you know, are busy, you know, scrolling on a phone or looking at something on a tablet or whatever, the concentration of reading a book, even a really quite easy to read book, as I think mine are, isn't ever developing. And therefore, in secondary schools, if you're not carefully introduced to some of the wonderful classics, you're never going to read them, or very rarely. So I do feel that we're now beginning to realise that this is important. It's difficult, though, because we've become a new age, and you can't really step back again. I mean, I've never been a fan of modern technology, so that it's quite easy for me. I mean, if people could see the phone I use, they'd fall about laughing. It's a museum piece. I don't mind in the slightest. And I'm just addicted to reading and read absolutely everywhere I go. But I do think with children, even if you're not particularly a fan of reading, concentration levels have fallen dramatically. And we need to be able to concentrate, because if you can't do that, and if you're flitting around all over the place or flicking through things, you're much better with your visual skills, and your ability to use your fingers is much better than, say, my ancient generation. But concentration, no.
Yeah, it's funny, because my kids were, last night when I got home, reading books in the library, and we were talking about that earlier as well, just the value of the library and part of that whole picture in encouraging them, and even as community spaces and everything. And I know you're in Dunleary, which is an amazing building, and we've been lucky.
Best library I've ever been
really?
In. Yes, it was just wonderful, and fantastic staff
there. They don't get
too.
The credit, I don't think. They deserve it.
You know, in England, it's so sad because so many libraries have closed now. I understand councils find it very, very difficult to make money go round. But I think if you start closing down libraries, it's such a statement that libraries and reading don't matter. And of course it matters. And there's a movement, too, to try and get every school to have its own library, because in primary schools, it's not a given. And in secondary schools, often a library is just three shelves of books and that's that. And if you're being brought up in a home where people either can't afford books or choose not to be bothered with books, it's the only way of getting children to see that books can be entertaining and funny and much more reliably informative than things that you can look up. I mean, I, like most people who have been mentioned on Wikipedia, have looked